back to 1988. We welcome you to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and I'm joined by the very special, the incomparable, the one, the only,
Lady J.
Tell them your real name, Lady J. People want to know you on a first name basis.
This is, and Lady J, that's all they're going to get.
No DJ Symphony?
Oh, yeah, I have that one. Yeah.
What about Daphne the Amazing?
Yes, that's that one's good too.
Okay. Welcome to the show, Daph J. No one can know Daph J, but we can know Daphne the Amazing. Welcome, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude. As we said, we are going to get into some comic book goodness this episode. We're in our 60s. Can you imagine?
Man.
Can you imagine?
Whoa.
We've been doing this for... pretty good. Did you think we'd have 60 plus episodes at this point in time? When we first started and it was just a humble little podcast with me and Jay Siegel and we didn't know how to talk into the mic or know what to talk about. And now we're 60 plus in and Daph J is the star of the show. People ask for you still, Daph J?
60, huh?
Over 60.
No, I don't think I ever... You know how we can't comprehend death? Like, we know it... No, we know it exists.
Wow, we're getting philosophical.
No, we know there's an ending, but you can't envision yourself being... It's like someone told me just yesterday, you know you're gonna get old, but you can't even see yourself being aged. Mm. So, I didn't think this wasn't gonna be successful, but I also didn't see it going beyond this.
Now... success is that's something that we that's a whole other conversation but no, as far no, as it being like, something fact, you kept going
that's what I'm
yeah,
saying yeah,
yeah. That like way I'm, we're successful.
No, you know what, no, we're successful. We, you need to make your you need to
statistically we're the number one podcast in Toronto. Statistically,
how do you know that?
Because I said so.
This is what I'm saying. Just do what you gotta do, own it, and then, you know, be the star of your own life.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Life, so starring like Eric Anthony.
I think it's a success, too, that we're still continuing with this.
You know what's cool about it is that...
Regardless if people listen...
Oh, people listen.
Or they don't, it's still a hit, I think.
Colby is right up in the mic. You're part of the show, too, Colby. Welcome to the episode. Colby the Pup. Okay, hey. Go over there and sit on the couch we set up for you. So, this episode, we're going to go back into the comic book realm. I've been trying to get you to read this book for some time.
For some time.
And before we get into it, we're going to talk about Paper Girls this week, everybody, from Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chang.
Actually.
Oh, you're going to throw me for another curve? Is that what you're going to do?
I'm kidding. I'm okay. Just joshing you.
All right.
That was a good one.
That was good. You messed me up. We had just, during the holiday season, we went back to our Netflix, as we do, on our downtime, but we rewatched the entire season of Stranger Things. And while we were watching that, I wanted to, as soon as it was finished, I wanted more of that feel, that type of adventure, that sci-fi, thriller, mystery type of genre. And it immediately made me think of this book. So watching Stranger Things for a second time, I always thought we should do a full episode talking about the show. But you could be there for hours and hours going through each episode. What was it like for you to watch it for a second time?
I enjoyed it just as much as the first time. Even though I was anticipating certain things happening, I was kind of like on the edge of my seat, waiting for it,
mm-hmm.
and excited about it. There was a lot of things that I completely forgot about.
Yep.
But it was entertaining to kind of delve into it. One more again.
So did mm-hmm. did it hold up for you?
Yeah, it did, right? And it really amped me up for when because one of the major things that I noticed this second time around is that very last scene when, you know, Will is back home, they're playing their Dungeons and Dragons, whatever it is that they're doing, and then, what happens?
I don't know. You were talking.
Oh, because then, you know, he basically...
you just drifted off. You looked away and you're like, is she still here?
Yeah. Okay. So, not Will.
Not the kid who was missing?
Not Will, the kid that's missing. Dustin. Mike. And when Mike does his whole, like, his celebratory, but then what I noticed this time around, I think, and we started picking up on it, is that the kids weren't satisfied with the conclusion of the game or their this fabricated story, fairy tale, quest. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And
campaign, they call it. They call it campaigns.
And they were. Everyone had a question, like, well, what happens to the knight? What happens to, you know, the princess? What happens to so-and-so? Yeah. Is he still lost in the whatever, whatever? Yeah. Is the thing still missing? And it's like, wait a minute. These are questions that are referring...
The viewers have.
That we have. Yeah, like, yeah, this isn't done yet. You know what I mean?
There's loose ends to tie up.
Yeah. And even though we know that there is a next season coming up, it was, like, kind of implanting those questions in my
questions
mind.
Questions to be answered, yeah, yeah.
And I was excited, like, yeah, whatever happened to the princess, which I think is Elle. Yeah. And like, whatever, what, you know, what about the knight? And then I'm thinking that's probably, like, Hopper, because...
Hopper or Copper?
Hopper.
Hopper the Copper.
Because he basically had made a deal with these, you know, government agent people.
Yeah.
And now
and you don't know...
We don't know what it is.
Agreements are
there's
the terms.
A lot of, like you said, loose ends that I think will end up getting answered
right
later on. Oh, my pup just put her head on my ankle. yeah, so it kind of amped me up for the next season, which I got excited all over again for.
So the reason why I brought that up and to get your take on, like, the things that are outstanding, I guess, is kind of to segue into what we're going to talk about today with Paper Girls. When you read Paper Girls, did you find that it was in the same vein, the way I had described it to you? Where, you know, it's not the exact same story by any stretch, but it's that same sort of feel of what's happening. So it's kind of a small town, group of kids, all aged around the same thing in the 80s, trying to figure out what the heck is going on all around them.
Definitely.
So did it strike that nerve of, like, I'm in the zone to read this because I had just watched something that I can kind of understand the setting of it? Did it help in your enjoyment or read through of the book just to set you up?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Okay.
Because this was reading material. I feel like I have to work. I have to work through this.
Okay.
As opposed to when I'm watching something, it's kind of.
But did it? What I'm saying is,
there's a natural suck in.
What I mean is, though, did it have you? Were you in the mood? Is what I mean.
No.
Oh, it didn't have you. You weren't like, I just finished watching Batman, so I want to read something similar. Do you know what I mean?
No, I was in the mood of knowing what happens to Dustin and Mike and Eleven, and I was in the mood of knowing them, not having to get into another psychological mystery
where you got to figure out what the heck's going
on.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
I gave it a chance, but I wasn't like, okay, what's next now? No, I was exhausted.
Right.
And the idea of having to read, like, now I have to get back into the academics. Like, I'm tired.
The academics. That's amazing. Okay, so let's get into the book. Paper Girls by Image Comics. This is your first Image Comics you've read.
Is it?
I'm not sure. I don't know if you've read any non-Marvel DC yet. You've started to read more of, like,
I've read Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, that's Marvel.
Oh.
But I'm trying to think if I ever recommended to you Image yet.
I'm
not sure if I have. I don't think so.
Okay. Oh, and a couple of podcasts ago.
Yeah.
I compared something to Gotham Knights, which Gotham Knights is not what I was referring to. I was actually referring to Gotham Central.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I wanted to clarify that.
Daph J knows what she's talking about when she's talking about it.
Because I was thinking, I'm like, wait a minute. That's not at all what I was referring to.
It happens.
But, why did I bring that up? Oh, For sure, that's DC. What is wrong? Relax. I don't think so. I don't think I've delved into anything outside of DC or Marvel before. I think this would probably be the first time.
Okay.
For me.
So it's an Image Comics, published through Image Comics from Brian K. Vaughan and art by Cliff Chang. So I'll give you the quick synopsis for those who are wondering what Paper Girls is. Maybe they've seen it on the shelf at their local bookstore or comic book shop and they're not 100% sure. If they want to read it, you're more average comic book fan. So Paper Girls follows the story of four 12-year-old newspaper delivery girls from the fictional Cleveland suburb of Stony Stream. While out delivering newspapers in the early hours of the morning on Halloween night, the town is struck by an invasion from a mysterious force from the future. That's the quick blurb synopsis that to get you into this graphic novel or this series from Brian K. Vaughan. Now, Brian K. Vaughan, you probably haven't heard of him before, Daff, off of any other comic you've read, because he hasn't done too much Marvel or DC work. He has done some pretty significant things in Marvel with Runaways, but he's kind of, and I know I say this all the time, but right now in today's current comic book community of writers, he's kind of the heralded guy that everybody is putting in the top spot of being comic book writers. He's done a few books like Why the Last Man, which is considered a really fine series from Vertigo, mm-hmm. which was a DC imprint, like an offshoot of DC. And then he currently has a series called Saga, which a lot of people say is like the best thing being published right now in comics, as well as Paper Girls. So he's kind of the guy, I know this is a long introduction of him, he's kind of the guy where if his name is on the book, people are going to read it no matter what it's about. He's got that reputation now. So he's comic book's top most respected writer. And I say that all the time, but this guy actually is in that category. And you've never read anything from him yet, correct?
Nothing. Nope.
Okay. Cliff Chang, who did the art in this book, quick bio on him. He did the Brian Azzarello Wonder Woman New 52 series, which was one of the things in the New 52 that was held in very high regard. So you've got like a team of the hottest writer-artist type of combo coming together to do this book. So when this was coming out, it was one of those things that was definitely going to get attention. Even though it's not from the big two, Marvel and DC, it's a trusted, automatically a trusted product. It's like saying J.J. Abrams is releasing a movie with Steven Spielberg. You're going to watch it type of situation. Does that make sense?
Think so.
Okay. So where do you want to start talking about it? How do you want to, what were your thoughts on it? On Paper Girls, on the characters, on the premise? Have you ever read anything like this before?
Have I ever read anything like this before?
And just to,
I've read Lord of the Flies.
How is this compared to Lord of the Flies?
There was kids in it.
Yeah, but is this more like Stranger Things or Lord of the Flies?
Well, definitely Stranger Things. I'm trying to think out loud what it is that I read. I'm just trying to figure that out.
So with this...
Are you going to let me finish?
Sure. Go ahead. Go for it. I won't interrupt you. Radio silence. Kobe? She's thinking. What song should I play during the silence?
I don't think I've ever read anything like this.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah. I've watched movies like this, yeah, but I don't think I've ever read anything like this.
Did you find that reading something like this, there's more that you can get out of it than if the things that you have watched like this? Does that make any sense?
No.
Because with a comic book, the comic book medium does things that television and movies can't do. And what that is there's no budget. So if you want to put the most crazy scene on a page, you don't got to worry how much it's going to cost you. It's just how much time it takes the artist, right? So you can have as much special effects, you can have as many monsters, you can have as many crazy scenes taking place. You don't got to go on location, you just draw it. So in a comic book, you can take it anywhere you want to take it to without having to worry about, can we do that in a television show? Do we have the budget in the movie? Or do we only have this much time to show the alien or the monster? Do you get what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So did you find that with this book, you have more that you can explore, more things happening at a quicker pace?
A lot of things were happening.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you understand what was happening?
Absolutely freaking not.
So what got you through it?
Frustration. Complete, utter frustration is what got me through it. Okay. Are we getting into the book?
Let's get into it.
We're in it?
Absolutely. 100%. Spoilers. Get into it.
Okay, my pro. I have a pro.
Yeah.
It's not a huge thing.
Okay.
But I did like how it was, there was the portrayal of girls doing the job of a boy.
High five. I got that as my notes too.
Did you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I liked how they weren't like sissy girls either.
High five. You see, you're getting what you're supposed to, like, you're getting it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me see. Not because I'm saying that. I'll tell you why I'm telling you this. Keep going.
So, okay. Now I feel like I should say, now I feel stressed out that I have to say another right thing.
No. You can say anything you want.
I think that's it.
That's incredible. So, the reason why I'm giving you like the kudos is not because it's, oh, you agree with me, it's my opinion too, and you're thinking how I'm thinking. I actually looked up an interview from Brian K. Vaughan from the LA Times, because this was the book that they were saying, if you're not reading any comic book, this is the one you should be reading. And so they interviewed Brian K. Vaughan, and one of the things that he said was, I wanted to write a story about kids, four kids. They had to be 12 years old at that particular age. And I didn't want them to care about the opposite sex. So this is what this is a direct quote from him. He says, they're aware of them, but it doesn't define their lives. They're the sort of hardcore gangsters that are much more interested in going around, shaking down the adults who owe them money, which they go and collect for their papers, so they can get their cassettes or buy their Nintendo systems. It was avoiding the relationships traps that come up in the 1980 films and giving them boys to be crushed out on. And just letting them and their friendships be the story. So, like you said, these are girls who are doing things in the 80s that boys were typically known for. Because when you hear the term paper girls, you're like, what's that That's about?
There was a video game called Paperboy.
Right. So if the book was called Paper Boys, you would automatically know what
that was about.
What the, like, who the boys are. But in this case, you're like, what do we mean, paper? What does that mean?
Yeah. Ooh, I found my third point. And I actually have it.
Right. Tell me.
It was set in the 80s.
That's a pro. And that's something I wanted to talk about in this book. One of the major aspects of this particular arc of the story, the first five issues, take place in the 80s. The story transitions later on in the next trade, which I think we should read and cover together. But in this one, it takes place in 88. What do you think it is about the 80s specifically nowadays? Because, again, I'm going to talk about Stranger Things as I talk about this book. What do you think it is about that era that is now becoming...
Well, that's simple.
Tell me.
That's when I came into the world.
Oh, that's it.
It's a gem year. It's a gem...
Era.
It's a gem era.
Decade.
That's it.
That's the decade you were born in.
Absolutely.
That's...
No, okay. In all honesty...
Yeah.
I think, for me personally, I think it's a great... Being an 80s baby, I think it's a great bridge to the past and our future. Like, we're the type of generation that know what a tape deck is. We know what a... What's the other thing that we had back then?
Nintendo, records, floppy disk computers, Atari, cartoons, like classic cartoons...
So there's all these things, but...
Eight tracks,
exactly. That, and, you know, even the type of music that our parents listen to, like, we know I wasn't born in the 50s or the 60s or whatever, but I know about that. She's in a pissy mood tonight, man. Yeah,
she's letting us know what's on her mind.
But also, I know what an iPad is. I know
how to... You saw that transition.
Exactly. I know how to stream things, downloading, a phone that was like this... Or a computer that took up a whole room is now in my pocket.
Right.
You know what I mean? That, I think that's a special bridge to be a part of. Yeah. I know the past and I know the future as of right now. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. Because it's one of those things now. I'm wondering if the 80s is the new 60s and 50s. Think about this for a second. I know this is a tangent off of Paper Girls, but I'm relating it because now we've got shows like The Goldbergs,
mm-hmm.
right? You got like Stranger Things. You even had the X-Men, latest X-Men movie take place in the 80s. A lot of things from that era are having a resurgence. And even lately, the Nintendo Entertainment System was re-released.
Yep.
To be put on 1080p for people to rediscover, you know? So, is it become... You remember... Name some 80s movies, automatic 80s movies that come to your mind.
Okay, so there's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep.
There's Dirty Dancing.
That's a good one.
There's... scares the heck out of me, but Stand By Me is That's another one. There's... Terminator.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah.
Wasn't Indiana Jones?
Yeah. Yeah, that took place in the 80s. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Gremlins? I liked Gremlins.
Back to the Future?
Yes, Back to the Future.
So the point I'm trying to make
is... I like this game.
Yeah, it's fun, right? But the point I'm trying to make is Stand By Me is an 80s movie. Dirty Dancing is an 80s movie. Back to the Future is an 80s movie, right? Three pretty quintessential 80s movies
mm-hmm.
taking place in the 50s and 60s. Do you get what I'm saying?
Okay.
So now we're getting that in our era, but it all takes place in the 80s. So is it just a generational thing that our generation, our version of the 60s is looking back at the 80s the way when we were kids in the 80s? People who are making movies were looking back at their era of childhood. Do you get what I'm saying? Is that the reason? Or is it more to it than that? That's what I'm...
I don't know, but that's an interesting theory.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, the Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote this, in that interview, I didn't know this. He went to school with Adam Goldberg, who's the creator of the Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs. Yeah, oh, okay.
He went to school with him, and he goes, I love it, but... He says it's a sanitized view of the 80s. It's all the good, fun things we remember. But he said Adam Goldberg would be the first to admit that it's sanitized. And when we look back at that period, we either look back with rose-colored glasses and think of all the great, kitschy things, fun elements of it, right?
Yeah.
MTV, television, wrestling, music, whatever it was at the time that was really significant in that era. But there's a lot of things in the 80s that took place where were dark and sad and scary. So he said he wanted to be honest about that period, and he wants that to be in any story. It's like that. You can either look at that era as rose-colored glasses, or you can look at the actual scary things that were taking place. So with this book, when you look through the first issue of it with Paper Girls, you see a lot. It's really cool how you see a lot of little hints of things that were actually happening, like the George Bush, the father, uh-huh. George Bush, running for president, uh-huh. and this being an era of coming out of the Reagan era and what the kids would have been like back then. So it's a real flashback to that time period, and along with things that were happening. You know, you see the Halloween night, people dressed as Freddy Krueger or as werewolves or as kids playing Nintendo, all those type of things. So I was just kind of wondering what the appeal is nowadays for us to be reading stories.
Set in the 80s.
And Brian K. Vaughan went on to say that even though there was a lot of terrible things that took place in the 80s, there was a lot of inventiveness, like weird disposable ideas that would come out. And it was a really fun time that you don't always think of fondly, but definitely with a lot of wow. There's a lot of creativity happening in between the margins in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really people discovering new ways to, I think, communicate.
Technology. The Goonies.
Yeah. There's another. Yeah. It's. I know that's random for you to say that, but again, this is very Goonie-esque.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So all of those elements, there's a certain thing
16
about,
candles.
Not so much. He actually said he wanted to get away from a girl crushing on boys. He wanted girls to be 12-year-old individuals.
How about the Breakfast Club?
Again,
but still, it's some kind of like discovery of yourself within a time period in your life where you're kind of figuring things out.
It's true, but do you notice something about Stranger Things and the Goonies that's similar in this book? An iconic piece of transportation?
Bikes.
Yeah. That was real, even in E.T., that was a real important thing for kids. That was like their first, that was like training wheels, pun intended, to driving a car. And these girls delivering their papers
on
the bikes and getting away from things and knowing shortcuts mm-hmm. of where to go on their bikes. It's a major, it's a part of the plot is using these bikes, right? Mm-hmm. And what was funny is that the artist doesn't know how to ride a bike, but he had to draw people riding a bike.
No way.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. So these are a couple of other things that I got out of that interview.
I can understand that sentiment. I started learning how to ride a bike when I was about like 18, 17. No, maybe 17.
You knew how to ride a bike. You had to relearn how to ride a bike.
I guess.
You knew how to ride a bike.
No, I didn't though.
Really?
I didn't.
So no paper girl for you.
No. Thanks for trying to lessen the blow, but I didn't. I was full grown.
Well, you can ride a bike just fine now.
I learned how to ride a bike on Staten Island.
If you had to get away from trouble, do you think you could do it on a bike?
No, I would die. I'd be the first casualty in the story. There's no way I could do it.
So we've talked a lot about the setup of this book. The four girls, there's Erin, who's the first one we're introduced to. She's kind of the new girl in town, and it starts off with her having a dream sequence, and you don't know what's happening. It's a very random dream sequence. There's a symbolic image of the apple that she's holding in her hand. She's got a young sister, but she wakes up on this weekend morning to have to deliver her papers, and then she runs into the other paper girls in the neighborhood, and this is her first time meeting them, and they're Mackenzie, who's I think the kind of the toughest one of the group. Is the one who smokes. Then you've got KJ, who's a young Jewish girl. And then you got Tiffany, who's a black adopted girl. So you've already got, you got an Asian girl, you got your redheaded white kid, black kid, and Jewish kid. Very diverse group of people. But they're all in unison because of this. They go to the same age, go to the same school. And they're all paper girls, right? What did you think of the cast of girls? How did you find them?
My favorite one was Mackenzie.
Okay.
I liked how, you know, she was kind of the tough skin chick. Wouldn't take anything from no one. I think she even had an interaction with a police officer. And she was kind of like, dude, go away. Like, no fear.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Did you like that these girls were presented in a way where they were, you know, that they had that toughness, that independence, that sort of...
I did. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? To be honest, and this is probably very, I don't know, feminist of me to say, but I think most women are like that. You know, because I don't think all females have it easy. There's always that presumption that we're weak or we can't compete in a man's world. So I think females or women end up trying to fight even harder and have, you know, they have to build thicker skin to be able to achieve the things that they want and to be able to prove themselves.
Yeah. And it's so fast paced. Like, were you, You start off.
I think chicks that play that damsel in distress, they're just bimbos.
It's a tired trope, right?
Right.
Always looking. It's almost like, I think nowadays especially, we're seeing that renaissance of women are the hero in a lot of these stories. Let's tell those stories.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the ones that don't just use a woman to be rescued.
Yeah.
Right? Women are the ones who can solve problems. They're the ones who can run countries if we want to.
Like, and if you're in Finland, not Finland. What's the other one? There's another country.
It might be.
Is it Finland where there's a women president and there's a lot of women in the...
I think it might be. Don't quote us on that.
Yeah, but
it might
really be. Don't.
It might be. Yeah.
But watch Where to Invade next.
Yeah.
You'll find out where yeah. where there's that's women president. That's our source. Yeah.
And I think the fast-paced, immediate adventure and the bond that they develop because they have to be the ones to figure out what's going on in their little small town that looks like something eerie and strange is taking place and there's really no explanation. Like, you as the reader are trying to figure it out with them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that adventure aspect of it? Because it shows them coming across things that as they're trying to deliver their route, they realize something is happening in our town. There's been this, I forgot where it was here, but they hear, let me see. They see these guys dressed like ninjas. And they, because it's the Halloween night early in the morning, they think people are just still dressed up, not knowing there's a guy dressed like Freddy Krueger who they end up going to school with. Then they see these ninjas, but they have a conflict with them and they steal their walkie-talkies from them.
They steal one of them.
They steal one of their walkie-talkies. So they start putting these little pieces together that something is amiss. Like, and the way these guys look is they are not normal. And then they end up in this, I read it twice, thankfully, because the first time you read it, you're so fast, like, man, what's going on? But it keeps you, you're peeled to it. Then they get into this house, and in the basement, they see that there's something that looks like some futuristic sort of technology. Could it be a time capsule? Could it be the thing from, it looks like the thing from the Fly movie. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Kind of looks like that. And they're all realizing that there's some crazy,
something crazy is going on.
Twilight Zone-ish, out of the ordinary, alien-esque, if you will.
So your question to me was, how did I feel?
No.
Did I enjoy it?
No, I don't remember your question.
My question. You asked me a question.
Yeah, I don't remember it now, because I'm trying to... there's just... This book, there's so much happening that you don't know.
This is what was very difficult for me to... I couldn't get into this book. It was very difficult to grasp what was happening, which I think, in retrospect, it was supposed to mirror what the actual characters in this book were going through.
That's what I mean. Because you don't know if it's about the girls or if it's about these ninjas, right?
To me, it was driving me crazy. It was honestly, it was making me doubt my own intelligence.
Was there at any point where you're like, okay, something strange is happening. They don't know. Everyone is trying to figure it out. I'm figuring it out with them. Did that occur to you?
That's what I said. What was happening in the story was a mirror of what I was feeling at that time, too. I didn't know what was happening. It was frustrating. It was pissing me off. And I felt like I was wasting my time.
So what made you keep reading it then?
Because I knew I had to talk about it. It was out of obligation that I kept going with this damn book, trying to figure out what was going on. Like, there was parts in the book, too, where I think when they do finally encounter these ninjas and try to figure out what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were even speaking. Like, there's, you know when a character in a comic book speaks, there's a bubble?
Right.
And in that bubble, there's legible words?
Yeah. Yeah, okay? Yeah.
But that doesn't happen all the time in this
book.
There's
a decoder for that.
What?
You can decode it. In the when this was released in regular form, there's at the back like a legend to decode what they're saying. Like, that's how much
thought was put into this. Nobody told me that. I obviously don't have that version.
No, I know, but...
But it was... I'm like, excuse me, why even put the bubble there just to mess with my mind? If you're not going to tell me what's going on, why are you having some foreign code in my face to begin with? It's just adding more confusion in my head. And then, when you finally do have, again, other people appear, now they start speaking a different language altogether, which seemed like they were speaking some kind of Spanglish. And then I didn't know if that was me.
It was like a futuristic version of English.
But I didn't know if it was my brain taking the two languages that I know, meshing together, and... Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm actually upset right now because you're not getting how serious I am about how this thing was really upset. You don't understand what it is to be in the mind of yourself and doubt what's happening in here. I didn't know if I was reading something and getting tired and missing points. I didn't know if I was just... If I skipped a page, so I'm like licking the book on the train. Like, literally, I was licking it. I was like, what the heck? I caught this guy looked at me, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I had nothing to tell him.
You were licking the book.
I licked the book because I'm like, what? I don't understand. I must have missed such a chunk that I'm so lost. And you know what I mean? And when I start seeing bits of Spanish, and then I'm like, wait a minute, am I thinking to myself or am I reading the book? Like, it was so, so infuriating not understanding what was going on. In the end, I had to, like, read it. Like, I was trying to read it, and I couldn't get anything out of it.
Here's the interesting thing, though, is you don't read...
Like a colossal waste of time.
Huh. But you read it in a pretty quick sitting, and not because you were on a time crunch. That was the thing that I found interesting, is that you read this on one trip home from work. And you usually...
No, I read it on the way there and on the way back.
Okay, but usually when I give you a book to read, even if it's a 5-issue graphic novel, you'll be like, I fell asleep, I got tired reading it. For you to come home and be like, I finished it, and I don't know what's happening. Did it... As you were reading it, was there any ounce of like, I want to know what happens next? Or were you just completely lost?
I was completely lost. So, I'm telling you, I literally was doubting how my brain was functioning. I thought the left was on the right and the right was on, like, it wasn't, I felt like my mind wasn't computing.
Right.
Like, this is a child's book. This is for children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's simple. It's not overwhelmed with words. It's not George Perez-like.
Good reference.
Like, it's...
High five.
It's pretty, like, I feel like, okay, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the most frustrating things that I...
So you hated it?
I didn't say that.
No, but I know that. I want you to...
Because I think... When something gets you this angry or this frustrated, it is an investment of an emotion. And something that actually affects you can only have that kind of impact on a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate Principal Rooney. I can't stand him.
And you're supposed to not.
I can't.
Right.
But... The movie's not the same without him. You need that prick.
Right.
To make you feel like, yeah, like, Ferris is doing the exact thing to tick him off. Like, he's going to get his, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you need something.
You need that thing to get you going.
To get you going.
And that's and for those who are listening and being like,
hate Stryker.
Right.
And no matter who plays him,
you hate him.
It can be the guy in the Wolverine origins. It can be the one from the X-Men trilogy, whatever, the initial one.
Stryker.
And then it can be guy in the 80s, young Stryker. There's absolutely no
version.
Nothing.
Yeah,
him, I dislike to
like the Emperor.
Same thing. Yes, that's another one.
Yeah.
Can't stand him. But if he wasn't there, you wouldn't have that same...
He makes you feel the hatred that Luke is supposed to feel.
Ugh.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, when...
So, that's what I'm saying. Like, as much as it frustrated me and ticked me off...
And the characters are frustrated.
But that's what I mean.
Right.
It's mirroring the emotion that the characters are going through.
Okay.
So, I think...
It's working.
The writer is kind of genius.
Okay.
Although I have no idea what the hell he's trying to tell me. I think he's pretty genius for doing that.
Okay, I like that. I like your take. That's why I wanted you to read this, because I like the fact that
so angry right now.
But see, I want you to read comic books that have strong female characters, contrary to the Lois Lanes and the Mary Jane Watsons, like the ones who have to be rescued, you know, where they're the superhero's girlfriend. I want you to read these things where they're the main characters now. You can kind of see yourself as a 12-year-old. And it was very purposeful that Brian K. Vaughan made them 12. He wanted them to be 12 because I think... And that's the thing about this book particularly, or with independent comic books, is that it can delve into more of the deeper things of our experiences, things we may have remembered, things that we have lived through, things in real life that we're going
to... Or things that you associate with. Like, for example, with that first initial dream sequence, I thought there was some kind of religious connotation to it, because there was this, I guess, hell rendition, or someone was being tortured or about to be tortured, but then you saw the apple. And I'm like...
There's a lot of symbolic things in here, right?
And
exactly.
And I was like, okay, are we talking... What?
and then
you see what happened there?
Right.
That was happening through my head.
Right.
The entire commute to work and back.
And then, but when you see them go on their newspaper delivery and come in contact with the first couple of strange characters that have entered their town, right? They don't know who's friend. They don't know who's foe. They don't know why are these people dressed like futuristic knights. Why are these guys dressed like cybernetic ninjas?
Yeah.
And then the Apple iPod-looking thing, the Macintosh product, falls out of the guy's pocket, and she picks it up and says, hey, what is this thing?
And then when I saw that,
yeah,
I'm like, is that an iPad? Or an iPod?
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute, no, I'm just too tired, or I'm just too confused that now I'm just making things up in my head, where... Later on, I figure out, oh, there is a connection to what I think it is, or what
exactly. So you're trying to put pieces together.
Maybe I'm not as stupid as I thought.
Exactly. That's the point, is you're picking up on all the little symbolic things. And in these type of books, there's a lot of things placed on purpose for you to pick up as they go along. Because this is going to be a finite story. This isn't going to be a series that another writer picks up and continues. He's got 50 issues or 40 issues, and it's going to be a couple years, and it's going to end. You're going to have a complete story here. So all the things that you're picking up, you're on the right track, but you don't know. You're not meant to know. It's not meant to be predictable the way a Batman story or Superman story is.
So I'm
going
to have to be made to feel like this for 50 more issues?
I don't know how long it's going to be. I'm just throwing that out there, meaning that it's going to end. Right?
Right.
So, those ninja cyborgs, they're teenagers, it looks like, from the future who have been tampered with, and it seems as though they're collecting...
How do you know they're teenage...
Because they say it. The ninja guys say it to them, remember? They go, we're teenagers, just like you.
And oh, those
the
ones.
Voice,
I'm talking
they put
about
the voice
the,
box.
I'm talking about the good posers, the ones that look like they were robots, but they weren't.
Yeah.
What are they?
Riding the dinosaurs.
Yeah, what are those?
They're part of some cabal from the future, some like the guy with the beard that you see wearing the Public Enemy t-shirt, who
he's
they keep
old.
Calling. He's an older guy. So what it would seem like to me, reading this, right, and I think this is what it's supposed to be, is there's, and it's in the synopsis, there's an invasion from mysterious forces from the future, and it looks like they're coming back to collect certain relics and pieces of technology from the 80s. And some people are going missing as well. So these girls hear all of these, the sky turns pink, there's little booms coming here and there, they see shooting stars across the sky, they see alien-looking devices in basements when they're trying to track things down or hide from people. They're starting to put together, like, wait a second, there's some...
People are vanishing.
People are vanishing. So there's something alien, futuristic happening that we're in the middle of, and we've got to go and either find our parents, who we can't find.
Oh, that sounds so exhausting.
It is exhausting. And it's that whole... figuring out what to do on a dime, because they don't know. They're just thrown into this thing, and all they got now is each other. And Erin, I don't know if she's the main character, but she's the first character we meet in this book. She just meets these girls for the first time.
Which I don't understand, because don't they go to the same school? And if you're telling me that this is Halloween night, haven't they already, like, interacted with each other at
school? I think maybe some might know each other, but some might may go to another school.
Because when you're in grade 12. When you are 12, you're not, like, it's not high school, like, where you have different classes with different...
Middle school. Yeah, it is.
You're... Middle school?
Yeah. 12. Nuh-uh. Yeah, yeah. 12 Nuh-uh. Is grade 6 and 7, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't go to different classes with different...
Oh, with different every... peers. No, not you yet. You have
your... Oh, maybe that's why.
Yeah, maybe that's why. See? So, and it's she's a thought new, process that I have to go through. And she's the new kid in the town, right? She's only been there for, like, a little bit. So they're just like, hey, you're that... person, so-and-so.
Mm.
Yeah, and another cool, interesting thing that they all have is some type of a weapon that they use. And he told them that they need to have some totemic thing that they carry with them throughout the night. So Erin has the pocket knife. The other one carries her hockey stick with her. KJ carries a hockey stick with her. And then there's a gun that comes into the picture that plays a part in this. Here's a question I want to ask you. I know we're going all over the place with this because the story is kind of like that, but it's a ton of fun. I know it sounds like we don't know what we're talking about, but we do. particularly the age of 12. I think it's significant in a way because it's that teeny bopper, technically, right? Where you're no longer a kid as so innocent. You're almost at that point where you're having to deal with life and the harshness of it for the first time, but you're still a little bit helpless. But then you're also kind of expected to be a little bit more than just a kid. Do you know what I'm saying? If you're not into boys yet, you're not into to the opposite sex yet, but you're also not into... You're starting to become a little bit more... of a personality. Does that make sense? When you look back at the age of 12, and at the same time, when you're 12 years old, it's also a time that you start to look at life and remember, not everything was that great anymore, the way these girls are looking at their life. Do you get what I'm saying? Or is that too deep?
Oh, it's so deep, I'm drowning.
You don't sound like it. Oh, that's so deep. I'm drowning. Do you get what I'm saying? Because it's very purposeful that they're at that age of 12, especially if Brian Cave Vaughn...
I think at age 12, you start gaining certain preferences and becoming a little bit more familiar with what your likes dislikes are, or you're trying to become someone.
And your life, I find that age, when I look back,
like, it's a stage of transition.
Yeah, yeah. You're not quite as sheltered anymore, but you're still not.
You being want some independence, but you still want you that knowing that you're safe somewhere.
Yeah, it's that. But
exactly. Yeah, there is. You get what I'm saying? It is a transitional period. Yeah.
Yeah, because you look at a kid, it's like, oh, they're 12, they can watch that now, or you know, they're 12, he can understand.
Or you're 12, you can stay home by yourself for a little bit. I'll be back.
Exactly.
Or, you know, you can order the pizza now.
You could take the bus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And back in this time,
you can watch your little brother or sister.
Exactly.
You're right. Okay.
That's that age where it suddenly becomes. Especially in the 80s, it was even more like that. Now, can you imagine sending a 12-year-old on a bike to go and deliver papers at 4 in the morning? You'd want to send them out with a weapon. Do you get what I'm saying? it's just very interesting that when you look back as a kid from that generation, you think back to when you're 12, not everything in life was rose-colored glasses. You look back and think, man, it didn't get any better than when I was 12. Because that's something that Mackenzie's stepmom says when they go and look for each of their parents and they can't find them. Mackenzie goes to her house looking for her father and stepmom, and she's the only one there. And she says, you know, he's missing. This is a invasion of the body snatchers on biblical proportions. And the girls are like, what the heck are you talking about, biblical proportions? She's drunk like a skunk, right?
Yeah.
She's got the gun in her hand. She's ready to do herself in. She's like, you girls are 12 now. So from when I was 12, everything from 12 went downhill.
Yeah.
And when you kind of think of life from that comment, it's an interesting time to reflect on and think, wow, from that age...
At that age, you start hating your parent, or not hating, but resenting that, oh, there's someone that's, you don't want to be told what to do. Life gets a little harder. You know, you have responsibilities now, you get in trouble, there's consequences to your actions, whether they're with your own family or with peers.
When your parents fight, you get why.
Yeah.
You know?
There's an understanding
there. There's a little bit more of that. Life becomes a little bit frightening.
Yeah.
And... when you think of how good your childhood is, it's usually like from 12 and before. 12 and after, oh, now there's the peer pressure. Now there's the harder. School's a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
Now you become a teenager and you get your heart broken. Like, it is that transition. And so I think that exploring these characters at this age is really interesting. For them to have to figure out what is going on in this town that is having some sort of a futuristic alien experience, where people are going missing and they're losing their sense of security as they're trying to protect each other and escape, as well as rescue, as well as
just figure out what's going on,
right? So I think that's what's part of the experience of reading this, is that you're going through it with them again. And you're getting those little nostalgic touches. One of the things that the guys that are dressed like ninjas, the teenagers like them, is when they decode it, he says nostalgia is death. Because they're the ones trying to collect pieces of technology.
The ninjas.
Yeah. Nostalgia is death. What do you think that means for them to say that? Because one of them comes back to... he actually doesn't escape. He actually loses his life. They actually kill him as he's trying to collect pieces of...
nostalgia is death.
So from what I gather, I'll let you ponder on that thing. So from what I gather, you got the people that are dressed in right, riding the dinosaurs. Yeah, they're adults riding what looks like futuristic dinosaurs. Then you have the...
so when you say that, they are pterodactyls, right?
Yeah, they're dinosaurs. But
it is it's not a monster.
From what I gather, they're dinosaurs to me.
Okay.
Pterodactyls,
yeah.
Right? And then you have the cybernetic teenagers that look like they're dressed like the ninjas. They have the little thing that they speak, the decoder on their voices.
But they got those from...
The other people. So from what I gather is that those people dressed in white... have traveled back in time to stop the young teenager-looking people from gathering some sort of intel or information from that decade to use against them. The battles between them, those two groups. So the people dressed in white are the bad guys, and the young teenagers are, I guess, your rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And the conflict is between them to stop them from doing something that we're still trying to figure out exactly what that is. The paper girls get involved and get caught in the middle, and they disrupt possibly space-time and history by getting involved and tampering with that thing that's going on. And that's what we're going to eventually find out, what it is exactly the conflict is and what the paper girls have now added to the ruckus of this whole story. Because if you notice throughout the book, they keep showing symbolically Apple even the man with the beard is wearing... Was
it not Mackenzie, not KJ, not Tiffany, but the other one?
Erin.
I think she was the one that was starting to kind of put it together, because I think she said that she had felt that she'd seen that symbol on the computer at her school.
Right.
Where she's like, but it's almost like this is the future of that.
Exactly.
Like, it's the computer that you can fit in your pocket kind of thing. And then her... I wouldn't say friend because they just met, but they were like, what are you talking about? A computer in your pocket? That's the most ridiculous... You think this is futuristic? Like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
But she, in fact, was actually onto something. Exactly. But we know that as a reader because we are of the future.
Right, exactly.
Oh my gosh, it's all coming together.
Right. And so the if you notice the guy that the people... I don't know what they're called, the people in white. I'm just going to call them the knights in white. That are riding the dinosaurs. They call, like, their boss, who has the beard.
Yeah.
He's wearing the Public Enemy t-shirt, and then another time he's wearing an Apple Music t-shirt. And then his phone has, like, the eye on it, and it's shaped like an apple when he answers it. So there's all these little tidbits and connecting pieces of...
I noticed his first t-shirt, but I don't remember the other one.
Yeah. Anyway. Apple Music was the label that the Beatles were on. But it's just all these little nostalgic things that they keep throwing in there that all connect to the symbolic thing of the apple that comes from... So she's holding some sort of iPod that we haven't even seen yet, it looks like, right?
It's a little one.
It's a little one. It looks like a shuffle or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's been...
Yeah.
It's there.
It's there. So you're... That's... As complicated as we made it sound, it actually is very linear, and it is something you can piece together. And you get on this journey, you just want to know, like, what happens now. So do you want to finish it off with how the story ends?
This was my favorite part of the book.
Okay.
I have to be honest, because not only was it over, but it completely introduced... Or clarified what in fact is going on.
Right.
And not Tiffany, not KJ, Erin. No, Erin. Basically, they must have time traveled because they got into this machine and then now encountered at least one of their future selves.
So with that cliffhanger then, did it make you want to pick up book two and continue? Or was it too much of an exhausting experience to try to figure out what the heck was going on in the first book? Daft J.
I'm thinking. I have to figure it out now.
Would you be willing to be along for the ride for the long haul, or is it too much of a runaround of a thing for you?
I don't know. I have no idea. It depends. It depends how exhausting it is. Depends how good the story is. Because if it's too out there, I don't know. There's too many... I don't know.
How did you find the art actually looking at the book? Was it aesthetically pleasing to you? Or was it also something that was too different for your taste? Because that can contribute to... If it's something you want to keep on reading.
I found the art to be... No disrespect to the artist, but I just found it to be kind of like... sketchy.
Yeah?
And not in the form that it's defined today by these kids.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like...
Did it feel like it was quickly put together? Like something that didn't take long to do from your...
Especially because I feel like it's not like they've changed their clothes.
Okay.
It's not like, I don't know, I feel like there was just a lack of definition in these characters. It's not like you had to, like, a lot of characters re-wore the same thing. I know, you know, different angles and, you know, their elbow being a certain way or their hair or reactions. But their wardrobe throughout this story never changed.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like. Even the ninjas, their wardrobe didn't change. The people in white, the knights in white, as you're calling them, didn't change. The only guy that seemed to have a wardrobe was, you know, the old man. Other than that, I don't... Because I remember when Jim Lee talked about Hush. Was it in Hush?
Yeah.
Where there was certain sequences where Batman was fighting his enemies. And he thought about putting, like, treads at the bottom of his boot. But then he kicked himself for it. Because then he had to be intricate in every panel where Batman's foot would be visible to the reader.
Right.
He had to put in those treads. And it was very meticulous and repetitive and minuscule. Like, it was just... It was redundant. I thought it was just a little bit of... I don't want to say lazy. Because I can't do that. I can't even do that. But yeah. If you're going to be telling a story, I feel like I just want a little bit more definition in this. Even the ninjas, when they got uncovered, they're so distorted. But I didn't know. I didn't even know they were teenagers until afterwards, right? They look like the Thing.
Decaying, kind of.
They just look so... I thought they were old people. I thought they were someone who was... An experiment was done on them. I didn't know if they were a burn victim. I didn't understand. And I don't know if that was the concept of my
I like hearing your perspective on it because... See, this one...
I was already confused, but seeing certain drawings the way it was, it almost added to my confusion. There was no clarity in the animation part of it. So I feel like normally... If I don't understand what's going on in the dialogue, at least the pictures help me put it together. And I felt that this...
Didn't do it for
this me. Wasn't helping me in that aspect.
Okay, it's interesting. Because, see, depending on the angle you come from I guess, what attracts you to a page as far as, like, considering what's good art and what is not as pleasing to the eye, because it's all subjective. When you come from that, I think, background of Jim Lee's, you like that real definitive, clean line work, I guess it would be. Is that...
No, that's absolutely right. That's what my preference is.
Mm-hmm. So you feel this one, it's more like, more stylized to look sometimes sketchy or not as clearly defined. That kind of makes you feel like they shortcutted it a bit.
I think so.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, you're not wrong in your opinion. This won an award
for... I feel bad because I know it's an artistic fashion and something that not many people can do.
Some people don't like Jim Lee. I mean, it's just preference, right? Some people think he's the best thing. Some people are like, I don't enjoy his art. So there's no wrong answer in saying that, so I want to get your take on it. Because this actually won an award for Best Artist.
No.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to see what your take was and your explanation for it.
Well, you got the last laugh.
Yeah, he's like, chick.
You don't know what you're talking about.
See, the thing
So what was the reason? Why did he get Best Art? Like, what was it?
Well, the thing is, it's part of what makes the art I'm starting to appreciate in comic books is, like you said, the... It's the pacing, being able to feel engaged with what the characters are going through, the motion of the story. Also, the angles that they're able to capture things from, because it is like directing, right? It is like shooting a movie, but just still shots. So the thing that I appreciate about this book and Cliff Chang's art is, one, it's very... He's got a signature style, like most artists do, but I feel like if someone were to say to you... take any picture from this book, even a random one, you would know what it's from. You would say, that's from Paper Girls. Whereas sometimes with a Superman or a mainstream book, you might say, what storyline was that from? Was that from Under the Hood or was that from Hush?
So you're saying that the artistry kind of gives it its own uniqueness.
Yeah, it builds this world that...
The pterodactyls. I didn't know if they were pterodactyls, they were a bird on steroids, or it wasn't sure. It's almost like it was just a distortion of what was happening, and maybe that was done purposefully to add to the emotions of the story and what the characters were going through.
Yeah.
It could very, very well be. I just because I'm not a fan of it, I respect the art. Mm-hmm. I do, even though I may not like something, because I do feel that there is an undertone. There is some connection to what is being told.
Right.
There's something that does always complements the story, and it's done purposefully.
Yeah.
It's just probably not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah. No, you're...
I do really like the cover.
Yeah. And all of the covers, that was another thing I was going to mention, is that all the covers, the design, when that book first came out, I didn't grab it right away because I wasn't sure, but the covers kept pulling me in to... This is just the trade paperback cover, but the individual covers had such a unique style and focused in on each character in a unique way as far as where they are in the story, that it was like, I want to know what's happening. These covers, it just said Paper Girls and the picture. That was it. It didn't have, like, all this other dressing on it.
Right.
It felt like
movie posters. It didn't have, like, the company stamp.
Yeah.
It didn't have the scent sign. Yeah. It didn't have a date. It didn't have written artist. None of that. It was just, it's just what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's not tainted with, not that tainting is the right word, but it really is its own thing.
It's all, yeah, exactly. And part of the thing that as you read on, like these first books, you definitely get it. But as the story continues, there's the color choices, the tone really sets the feeling of what it is that they're experiencing, right? Because you got like these backgrounds of just one tone on the page, and none of it is extremely bright. You never get an overly lit scene in
even
the book.
Even when there is a lot of color in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So these are the type of things that set the mood of what you're reading that kind of makes the art work or not work.
But I didn't know if the color choices were a reflection of the era that they were talking about. Like everything's very electric. Like when I think of,
but muted a little bit too, right?
Yes, yeah, muted. But I mean, like, you know, there's purples and pinks and orange. And when I think of the 80s, I think of the big hair and like bright, bright, bright blush where people look like they're wearing, like their face is on fire.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The blue eyeshadow and, you know, like ribbons in your hair. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I felt like the color scheme was very reminiscent of also that time.
Yes, pastel-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah, everything.
Not electric, but yeah, pastel.
Pastel-y, and even if it's in a bright room, it's still like a muted version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's setting the tone of the feeling that these people are that you're supposed to be feeling as you read it. Nothing is completely illuminated as you're going through it. And I think that for me is what appeals to me about the artwork in it. And I really liked, and I got used to his style as well in the Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing him do that character and that world and then transitioning to this whole new world that they're building for themselves, I'm like,
you know what it kind of reminds me of?
Mm-hmm.
Like New Frontier art a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Like an older...
Yeah, like a hint in the past.
Yes.
Hint to the past.
Right. And that's exactly, like, when see, the more you kind of break it down, the more you're getting what they're doing on purpose.
Well, I'm appreciating it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not so, like, I hated it. No,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I get what they were. I understand why you got the award, Mr. Chiang. Is it all right?
Cliff Chang, yeah.
Yeah,
Cliff
Chang. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good job.
So, overall, is it a recommendation? Would you recommend it to somebody who said, hey, I want to read a non-superhero book? Would you say this is something you got to check out? Or you'd be like...
I would recommend it with caution. Not that
disclaimer.
Yeah, that's the word. Just if you're ready, if you have the patience and you're wanting to go for an adventure, and give it a try. But for me, like I said initially, oh man, It literally made me feel... I felt like an idiot. I didn't know... I felt incompetent in reading this thing.
Imagine reading one piece of it at a time, and you have to wait a month.
That's awful.
To get the next...
That's awful. I would have given up very easily. I would have given up.
So I think if you were to read this one more time, kind of knowing what to anticipate and now getting a little bit of context, you'd probably be like, wow, this is actually really good.
Hmm.
But these are the only 5 issues that take place in the 80s. That's it.
That's right.
We go to 2016 with the kids from the 80s.
They're going to look like hipsters.
It's going to be pretty interesting.
If they don't change their clothes.
So the cool...
Oh, man.
The cool part is, right, looking the way they do and now being kind of lost in a new era, she's going to encounter herself, right, and have to figure out where she is in the time stream. But also, what they had as technology was walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to come into an era of...
People can talk into their watches now.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. That's shell shock.
Exactly.
Shell shock, yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, what would it... If you... Imagine you being a kid... We were 90s kids, really. But if we were from... Imagine playing Nintendo. And someone came to your house and you're like 5, 6 years old or something like that. And they come and they're using an iPad. What would that do to your... How do you think we would have reacted to that sort of shock of seeing... You know what I'm saying? What do you think that would do? Could we have even... Would it have blown our minds, literally?
You know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of that scene in Back to the Future where Marty is in his mom's house and they're eating dinner in front of the TV. And... When he's like, oh, I've seen this before. It's a rerun. And they're like, what's a rerun?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, oh, yeah, I have a TV in this room. He's like, how do you have 2 TVs? That's, are you, like, no one has 2 TVs. And now it's like people are walking around with TVs in their pockets.
Exactly. Isn't that, and like...
It's incredible how... I don't think we'd be able to comprehend. If someone walked into my house or if I came across something like that, I don't know what I would do.
It's like we speak a different language too, right? It, like what we, our verbiage and how we even communicate with these things.
Well, even commuting, like you can go anywhere and really and truly, no one gets lost anymore. If you do, you're not well. But there's no excuse for you to not know where you're going.
Right.
There's GPS. There's, you know... maps, like before you had to actually take a road map with you, highlight your route and pray that you didn't miss the exit. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You had to earn it.
Yeah. And then after that there was MapQuest, you know? And
yeah.
And that was like, oh my goodness.
Find out anywhere you want to go. You don't need Perkins.
But you had to print it out.
Yeah.
And God forbid again that you missed the road and now you're on somewhere else where MapQuest isn't.
You needed a real co-pilot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you really did. And now it's like, oh, we missed the exit. Oh, no, it's rerouting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it's a completely different time from before. But I think that's what makes it special that we were introduced into the world at that age, because we know what it's like to not have a map. And we know what it is. So I feel like we appreciate the technology, but I also feel like I've earned my stripes. Like, if I do find myself in a pickle, I know how to get myself out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You changed as it changed. You were part of that generation.
But I also know how to default to the basic settings. Like,
right.
You know what?
That's a good point. I like that. Default
as
to the basic
to
settings.
These,
yeah.
These kids today, where they have everything at their disposal and everything's flashy and shiny and new...
They don't know what it's like to start over because your game went yellow on the screen. Right?
But they just, I think they don't appreciate the basics.
No, there's no, you can't though. It's not even their fault. You can't. But when I read something like this and
like,
I ask those.
Like, sorry to interrupt you, but
okay.
I feel like even a kid, if you were put them in a car, they would suffocate. Like they wouldn't know how, if it wasn't like an automatic button. And I'll say this because my cousin was in a U-Haul with her kid and it was a hot summer day And it was, you know, no ventilation as yet. AC was taking a while to kick in. And then, you know, my cousin told her, like, you know, put down the window. And in this U-Haul, it was one of those where you actually, there was a handle attached to the door.
Classic.
And you had to wind it down. You had to do that left rotation. But the kid was looking at like, Mom, it's no broken. Yeah. What do you mean it's broken? I can't find the button. Like, how, like, there's no, you can't put down the, she's like, of course, wind it down. You need to actually grab hold of it. Not everything is.
It's crazy.
Like.
It's one of those things that when you read something like this. And you ask yourself those questions, knowing you lived through that. Like, with a girl in this, there's a scene where she has a flashback of playing Arkanoid her whole life in front of a Nintendo. You know that you, oh, that was right. You, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At some point, that was both of us. When you see that and think of where we are now, and try to juxtapose that viewpoint, you really realize we live in the future. Mm-hmm. Even though it's the now. Like, we're living in the now. We're living in a time where we can't even comprehend. Our tablets is television. It's a movie theater.
It's a radio.
It's radio, video games, music.
It's like, a phone.
Yeah.
It's a recorder. It's a video. Yeah, it's everything.
All in on one small thing that's lighter
it's
than...
It's a spy device, because I'm sure these government agencies are watching and hearing everything we're saying.
Yeah, that too. It's surveillance, right?
Oh my goodness.
It's a real mind trip to think of... Imagine somebody in that era seeing this. You would look like a prophet. You'd look like a god of what you would be able to do with this. It would be like having an all-seeing, all-knowing book. Isn't that crazy when you think about it? They were delivering papers and there's a commentary and it's saying, you know, my dad says that papers are going out of business. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no future in them. And you're like, wow.
That's...
It
happened. It's yeah, true.
Right? When you see someone have a paper in front of their door nowadays, it's like, really? You're still getting the paper delivered?
Although my neighbor gets their paper delivered.
And it just sits there.
And I think it does just sit there. It really does. It's been there a minute. Yeah. But I like seeing it, actually, if I'm being completely honest. It is nostalgic to see.
But doesn't it feel like, what year that. Is it? When you see that, I was like, what year are we living
although
in right
I
now?
Also feel maybe that certain things are kind of coming back. Because...
The nostalgia of it, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, a patient told me that she gets her vegetables delivered to her. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, yeah, it's called Fresh Organics something. I'm not by any means trying to advertise or whatever here. But she did tell me something. And mm-hmm. you just select your groceries mm-hmm. and they deliver it for you. And shipping is only like $2. And I'm like, what in the world? How does that happen?
Right.
It's convenient, yes, because you don't have to stand in line. You don't have to go out into the cold if you don't want to. But then I'm thinking, wait a minute, this isn't exactly anything new. Like, people used to bring you milk at your door.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
I remember my grandmother used to have somebody bring her groceries, but you couldn't do it online. You'd have to call, and it was just the one at the corner, like, right at the corner of where they live type of thing. So mm-hmm. But
this is...
Now it's, like, very... specific and
but I think they do take I think some technology does come from the past.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not
how can we make this more convenient? Yeah. How can we make it more wide ranging?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, these are comic books, but they raise questions. That's what I like about them. Mm-hmm. Is that they make you think about certain things that sometimes go ignored. Or not realizing where you live or the era you live in or where you came from, what you've seen.
Like, I don't even think long-distance charges really apply anymore these days.
No, they don't.
There's people have WhatsApp where you can just send, like, a voice message. Like, you can... There's FaceTime now. There's all these different things where it's just a different time altogether.
Yeah. That's why, like,
man, it's a little trippy when you actually sit down and dissect it a little bit.
Yeah, and that was the part of the joy of reading Paper Girls, was seeing how they were encountering people from the future with certain pieces of technology that we recognize. But for them, it's like, what the heck is this? And for the people from the future, they're like, get the walkie-talkies. You know, nostalgia. we got to take whatever we can from here
and bring it with us. So you asked me something. You said nostalgia is dead.
Nostalgia is death.
Oh, death.
That's what the ninja looking teenagers
say. And then you asked me, what does it mean?
What do you think it means?
I have no idea. You don't either.
I'm sure they'll explain it, but I've heard or read places where people who are nostalgic are usually the ones who more likely not to get ahead in life because they love
what happened. Because they're stuck in the past.
Yeah. Whereas people who are progressive and
they're driven to keep forward.
Yeah. They're not as stuck to what was. They want to make what's new, and that's the ones who become recognized and make history. Whereas the ones who love history, they never move forward. It's just philosophy, right? So I'm wondering if there's something to be said in that statement that those characters
in say. Reference to that, yeah. To what was said in here.
Yeah, I was just wondering if what you thought of that, because that person who says that ends up dying in it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of things to pull from this little 5-issue book that we just started the journey on. But I hope the conversation makes you like...
You know what it does, though? It does. And I've expressed that before, where it's kind of like the book in school where they assign it to you. And yeah. You're like, oh, I don't want to read this.
What the hell is this about?
But then when you get into class and you have people, you're hearing people's interpretation of something and you hear their perspective and you have the teacher breaking down meaning, the meaning of certain things and character development, all of a sudden you kind of become a little bit more intrigued and you're like, okay, I want to be involved in the conversation.
Right.
I want to know what's going on. And now you pick it up. So as frustrating as it was initially to read it, I think my interest has been piqued again.
Cool.
I think more so than when I initially picked it up. Because at first it was like, okay, this is the next topic. Let me go in guns ablaze. And now I think I'm excited for the next sequence to kind of pick up where I left off.
Yeah, because even if you don't know what is happening yet, it's going to come together.
Oh, for sure, right? But when it...
Momentarily, it's like, what?
Oh, it was more than what. It really was. Yeah.
So a thumbs up. Just one for now.
A one for now.
You're going to give it one thumbs? I'll give it the two because I have read it twice. And I've also read the next couple issues to know kind of where it goes. So,
can you tell me, without spoiling it, does it get good?
It does, but there's still questions.
Or is it still just deep?
It gets good, but there's a lot more... There's a lot more questions now that are going to need to be answered. You're like, what, this, that, how did this happen? And now it'll make you reference, was it when this happened in the first section of the book?
So things connect.
Things connect.
Like those bubbles or those voids in my brain start getting filled a little bit?
A little bit, but there's going to be more that you're going to ask.
Oh, boy.
So
okay.
It's not going to be a closed loop. It's going to be like... What becomes interesting for me in the next chapter is what the characters learn of themselves, of what happens to them in the future.
Oh, man. That's trippy.
That's trippy. So some of them are like...
Would you, if we had that capability, kind of taking it off, would you want to know?
To be continued.
No way.
That's what we're going to talk about next one.
Are we?
Well, if we do the next book, that's what we should discuss, because then you'll find out what happens to those characters, right?
Fine.
That's a good way to cliffhang it. Thank you, Daph J, for reading Paper Girls.
I want to know about... now.
I know, you got to read it now. It's weekend, so you could do it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed our around the world of Paper Girls being confused and the clarity and the philosophy that we discussed by this small little 150-page graphic novel.
Is book two as big as this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe not bigger?
Not bigger. No.
Oh, okay, good.
Not bigger. You won't be in for like a hefty read. It'll be faster paced.
Okay.
So thank you everybody for listening with us. We appreciate it. Email us if you've read Paper Girls and if there's some insight that you can give to myself and Daph J.
Yeah, if there's anything you can do to help me out.
Give her the cliff notes of it. Email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Visit us on Facebook. can just search for Eric Anthony. You'll find me there, as well as our Instagram page and our website. Until next time,
take care of yourselves and each other. What?
Is that... You just quoted Jerry Springer. Yeah.
Because you said until next time. It just seemed... It just rolled off the tongue.
I thought you were going to say until next time, keep fit and have fun.
No. That's a good one. We should do a thing where we do like little...
Old classic lines to end it.
Yeah.
Well, you just referenced Jerry Springer. What were you watching when you were in middle school?